Welcome to Companions of the Perception Check, episode 13. Tonight, we'll be discussing the half-elf race in Dungeons & Dragons, and I am joined tonight by...
Seth Colgrove.
Zachary.
Tina.
Welcome, guys. Oh, half-elves. I mean, they've kind of been a staple in fantasy for as long as there has been fantasy. They've been in since it, I know first edition they were there, so pretty much since the beginning. Yeah. I don't think they've changed too terribly much through the editions.
No, I think
Santa Claus was
pretty
the first,
tough.
Wasn't he?
And all other half draw their bloodlines from him.
He burned them like he does in Santa's sleigh. So, Zach, you're a bit more knowledgeable than I am. Have elves changed much through the editions?
It used to matter more what kind of elf your other half was, but not too much. They do vary somewhat between the various campaign settings.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because of the fact that elves are very different on Athas, being rail thin and over 7 feet tall, a half-elf there is significantly different from half-elves in most regions.
Yeah, I know in the Eberron campaign... In the Eberron setting, there's a lot more disdain for half-elves between the societies.
Yeah. Yeah, one thing they did bring up a lot in fourth edition, though, was half-elves had a big talent for picking up new skills. In fact, there was a Paragon path only open to half-elves in a Dragon magazine, and it was all about actually using the powers of other party members.
Oh, I know. As they are used in fantasy literature, they tend to be accepted in their community, but not necessarily liked.
It also depends on exactly where it comes up. Like, if they're in a society that's pretty cosmopolitan, yeah, but Erling Moonblade, which we'll get to, she's a direct descendant of a Moonflower royal. The fact that she's a half-elf is a pretty big stigma.
Well, I mean, for the general player, I mean, they're even a cosmopolitan place, you know, if you look through a lot of the literature, yeah, in the Dragonlance series, half-elves were, at least from Elven side, kind of looked as inferior, a little bit of disdain. There were some other...
Erelin in the third Song and Swords book seriously fears getting killed if they figure out that she's a half-elf. And because she sleeps rather than enters reverie, like elves do, she actually even gets these illusory lenses she puts over her eyes when she's actually sleeping to make it look like her eyes are open and still look out.
Ah.
Because she's elven enough looking that she can pass for elven, but she doesn't do all the elven, you know, things.
Doesn't play all the elven games?
Well, no, she wants to be an elf for most of the story.
Mm-hmm.
And she wants to be treated as a full-blooded elf, but because she's basically having to infiltrate a society of wood elves, she has to be able to pass as a full-blooded moon elf. She knows all the culture, but she still can't. She, like, the fact that she actually sleeps would give her away right away.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, we can trace this back here. As far as I can tell, generally the first half-elf was definitely Aragorn, Lord of the Rings. Although he's, I guess, technically a bit more human than elf.
I was not aware he was a half-elf until you guys started complaining about it a few weeks ago.
What is interesting about that is, though, is you still have the half-elf drawn in that story, too, with his love interest, whatever her name is. I have not read The Lord of the Rings yet. Yeah.
Liv Tyler. That's her name. Liv Tyler.
Liv Tyler. I'll double check that. I think that was in bold in my copy of Lord of the Rings. You've discussed Emerlyn Moonblade from the Song and Swords series.
She's a big player in the first, third, and last one. Though she appears in the others. But the thing is, a lot of that, she is the granddaughter of the elves, Queen Amlarul. Amlarul's daughter, Princess Amnestria, sort of just went out to be an adventurer, slept with a human, and then died afterwards. And you really get this feeling of how much she's looked down upon, because even when her extended family comes to, you know, take Amnestia away and, you know, bury it on Evermeet, they won't even let her see their scene. They're completely cowled up the whole time, won't talk to her, and they are so pissed that she actually is the inheritor of the Moonblade. Because basically anyone who has a Moonblade can claim the Evermeet royal throne. It is maintains its magical powers in the family line.
And they can't take them because it will kill them.
You read the first one.
Yeah. I've also finished the Evermeet book. Explains that.
Yeah. And she eventually does give it away, but because she I don't remember the name of Amlarul, a full elfin grandson, the one that starts with an L. She eventually proclaimed him as her heir, but a lot of that first, she's trying to get into the elven culture. Kaimal Nimizin plays on that. After that, she's trying to infiltrate into elven society, and pretty much by the end of the series, she's like, screw it, I'm not going to be part of the Harpers, the elven culture, or anything of that, any of those anymore. And she kind of just says, screw all of you, and basically leaves the power play of power politics, Waterdeep, and all of that.
Well, moving on from her, I know you wanted to talk about Raiden Kane, which to me sounds like a mashup of Mortal Kombat characters.
I actually, even when I think of the of the Aboleth trilogy, I think of the Mortal Kombat song, but instead of the names of, like, or either test your mind into the characters, I just do characters from that book. But he's a monk from the Monastery of the Yellow Flowers. And he actually got sort of mutated in the spell plague, where a particular artifact that protects him from aberrant influences actually got to his body, and basically the runes on it actually transferred into him. He doesn't survive the breach, but then you see what I think is his ghost in one of the more recent Grizz books. Or at least I think it is, because it's the same monastery and it's the same name. So, but he also had sort of the monastic training from his father. He had his mother's desire to protect the world from aberration. He's also in one. He first appears in one of the early dungeon series as a secondary character, but I don't remember much about it. I don't remember which one. And he uses a magical blade that's a combination of an evil and good sword called Niche and Angle. But he was more interested. You don't really get as much of the half-elf culture thing going on with him, because he's very much a loner.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing you really get about him is his respect for the sanctity of the natural world.
Hmm.
Anyway, I was just thinking, isn't Lady Vol a half-elf? And she's also half-green dragon, but I think it's one of those cases where there are too many halves.
Which series was that from the Eberron books?
I'm not sure. She's from House Duval, and she's the founder / inspiration for the Blood of Vol cult, which is a real elf improvement, but often through necromancy.
Looks like she is. She is a half-elf, half-dragon.
Not the most common version of a half-elf.
No.
Yeah, but still, it's just something that occurred to me. I couldn't remember if she was a full-blooded elf, half-dragon, or a half-elf, half-dragon, but still.
Thankfully, not too many halves in this one.
Yeah. That's a common thing in D&D, by the way, too.
I suppose we now have to move on to someone who I kicked and screamed to keep out of this list. But I suppose it's the only known one between us for a half-elf in Dark Sun setting, Sadira.
Yes. You were so close to naming that, weren't you?
No. Never.
Yeah, huh. The thing that makes her different is, well, one, you have the different sort of society in Dark Sun, the world being much more dystopic than most of the others. So you've got that going on, and the fact that the elves are basically a bunch of nomadic thieves and slavers and stuff really changes things.
I do like that the elves in Dark Sun are not the, I guess, stoic, ageless, haunty, we've been here watching over you young idiot humans. They're different. They're taller, they're thinner.
Yeah.
And their
ability to run, and that sort of affects Sadira's physique as well. She doesn't look like a half elf from like pretty much any other world. She still kind of has the outcast sort of thing going on in there. Society, but if she can literally keep up with them, she can quite literally run with them.
Yeah.
She gets a huge focus in the third Prism Pentad book. series. And though we love you guys to go look at, if you have a chance to read the third book of Prism Pentad, unless you just want the full story to work through the awesome fourth and fifth book, skip it.
Yeah, it's really tiring to get through. I mean, it was maybe 300 pages, and it took me forever to go through that. And I usually go through a D&D book of that length in 3 days. That took me, 3 months off and on.
Yeah.
And some of the other ones, other settings, like Dragonlance, you've got Tanis Half-Elf. And he is an outsider for most of the campaign. Well, most places in the campaign, or in the world, I should say. The elves don't like him because of the circumstances which change. Either he was the product of rape, or his mother ran off with a human, and it was kind of wish-wash between the two, but the elves don't like him because of that and their racial purity, and the humans don't really like him because he's different.
Elves is the master race.
Yeah, kind of like that. And we've also got the Jerian from the Dreaming Dark trilogy of the Eberron setting that up. He's a half drow, which is still a half elf in some ways. And that one was, you really saw at least the drow disdain for an outsider like that.
My question is, he actually from Zangrik?
I don't recall if it's said or not.
Okay.
I mean, he knew his way around enough, but
yeah,
that could have just...
Yeah, I was just thinking because they make Drow sort of different in the in that setting a lot of times, because they're really underdark dwellers. They're more... They're more nocturnal jungle dwellers, aren't they?
Yeah, in the Eberron world setting, elves were originally a slave race of giants, and as the giants' magical power waned, the elves rose up against them. However, the drow were some of the elves who essentially stayed loyal and fought on behalf of the giants and were granted magic, and they were marked by turning their skin and promised a paradise for their labor.
Yeah.
Through and through, they tend to be popular as the half-elf tends to be popular as a easy way to make an outsider character. There's very little you have to explain. You know, why are they an outsider? Well, they're a half-elf, and that kind of tends to just be it.
Yeah. I'll have to face that. I kind of see it, because if you want to have a story with it, it's a lot harder to do with a half-orc. That's about the only other way you can do it outside of Dark Sun with Mole. So that's why I think they do it.
Yeah. And sadly, I see them more often than not being paired up as...
Yeah.
Here we go.
I made if you check your outline, I've made time for this rant.
I know. I've mentioned that to Kim several times. There's an action mark that says Kevin gets to rant about half-elf rangers. Yeah.
Well, from one side, it makes sense why a half-elf would be a ranger, but the fact that you can pick up almost any fantasy novel and find one tells me the tropes overused and just kind of lazy writing for me. You know, insider character who's shunned away from the world. Oh, just throwing a half-elf for that makes perfect sense there.
I think it fits together nicely. Nobody wants to be a half elf. Nobody wants to be a ranger. Just stick them together.
I'm sure you always get that one.
I've actually seen an interesting version of that in the Haunted Land and the Brotherhood of the Griffin series. You have Geed and Ranger, who is actually, he's a human, but he was trained in all the ranger ways by elves.
I just read the book. It was not very good. Let me find it here real quick. I can tell you. Because the character is actually... no, he is a ranger. He's a human ranger. The Lost Library of Cormathir.
Oh, man.
Huh?
I think I've heard. I think you've told me about that. I think I may have read it, but if I did, it wasn't memorable enough.
Oh, no, it's not memorable at all. It was a little... eh.
So I'm usually described in all my friend groups as just eh.
Just eh.
Yeah.
Bailey. Bailey, he's a ranger who trained with elves and trained with a wizard, but you know, the trope used there was just an orphan. Bailey was an orphan, so he was able to do that. And the rest of the book falls apart after, basically after that introduction, the whole book falls apart. So let's steer ourselves back to the topic at hand of the half elf. So playing a half elf.
One more. Actually, a great way to get insight into half elf, how you half elf, in a non-antagonistic way, is there's a good essay in the Thousand Orcs. And he's contemplating actually taking his romantic relationship with Caddy Bree, a human wizard, and I think maybe also ranger, to sort of the next level. But then he's thinking about, one, what it means, because they're going to age at a different rate.
Mm-hmm.
And two, what life would be like if he had a son or daughter.
Hmm.
Because of the various issues that would come up, besides being a half-drow to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that does help. So, moving into... you've decided you're going to play a half-elf.
So you've decided you're going to be a half-elf.
What other life... take a long look at your life and look at decisions you've made.
If they've led you to here, you're wrong. No.
No, there's great reasons to be a half-elf.
There is.
Yeah.
You know, you look at your motivations for why is your character going out adventuring? Are you an outlier in your group? Are you more human and very materialistic, looking for adventure? Are you methodical like an elf, or are you rash like a human. You know, which side of your heritage tends to come out more. And in the realms, generally the half-elves are not ostracized by communities that tolerate humans and elves, but are you from that area? Are you from are you within an elven enclave, within a human territory?
I know elves still have a few more issues, especially gold elves, but it's mentioned that that when Erlen goes to Evermeet at the end of the third book, basically just to tell off her grandma, and she's like, "You risk execution for coming here." I mean, the grandmother lets her go because there is some respect and pride in her, but at the same time, you're not pure. You're not a pure elf. You shouldn't be here.
Mm-hmm. And in the same way, there are no half elf gods for one to follow. So you kind of have to. I don't know if you're going to be a paladin or a. Or even I guess you choose a deity for a cleric to add a little spice to that. You know, there's nothing really you have to choose one side or the other.
Not really. There are some non-elven deities that elves typically worship, and half-elves probably would too, like Soon, for example. Soon Firehair, goddess of beauty, love, and pleasure. Official character.
When creating one, I guess you kind of get to get your pick of the bunch for namings, because you could have a human or elf name, or even a combination of both if you'd wish.
Yeah, and what's even great is they even said that doesn't even necessarily say which culture you emulate more, because some who are raised by their elven get human names, or some raised by their human parents still get elven names. Kind of reminds me of the movie American Ninja. And the guy who was raised by, like, this Japanese ninja master, he's like, "I call you Joe because that's the only American name I knew."
That's a helpful way for the parents to get their kids to fit in. Raise them as one thing and name them after another, though.
Maybe they're naming them to be unique, like how it is nowadays.
No, none of them are named Apple.
You don't know that.
How about Absidy? A, B, C, D, E. Absidy.
Ampersand.
Oh, is that a real name? Because I'm sad now.
Yes, there was one. Yes, someone I know actually named their kid Absidy. And another person, God honest, on their birth certificate, Christian name is Tupacalypse.
Now them I like. That's just fantastic.
Well, after you get your...
I swear, there was somebody I saw online who named their kid Optimus Prime.
Well, that's just awesome.
He'll be our next president. Well, he'll be a president.
Well, once you get your name, you gotta roll your character up. Like half elves get a little bit different. You get a +2 to charisma, and you get to choose two ability scores to increase by one.
That sort of combines what elves are good at, and also sort of the fact that their ability score improvement is they get +1 to everything. So it's sort of, they're sort of like elves, but a little more adaptable. And don't have everything elves have going for them.
Yeah. You also get dark vision, which is very helpful. And you get Fey Ancestry, which gets you advantage on saving throws against being charmed, and you can't be put to sleep by magic. Which is pretty neat.
Yep.
However, the wizard could slow down time and start talking, giving you a very boring lecture, and that technically isn't magic that's putting you to sleep. So... you're also very versatile in your skills and have +2 to any skills of your choice. You can speak, read, and write common, elvish, and one extra language of your choice.
Yeah. It's sort of, again, a mix. That language option is sort of a mix between what human elves get, because humans get common and then they get to choose two other languages. If you're a half-elf, you still get to pick one, but elvish has to be your other one.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you throw that in with, like, a druid or any other class that gives you another language, you're already up to 4 languages there.
Yeah, not even backgrounds will give you languages, too.
So, yeah. I mean, it's
fucking Rosetta Stone.
Pretty much, unless you're like our party and everybody chooses the same ones, and then you're just kind of no one understands.
Okay.
Languages, so.
Yeah. When I was asking you what languages you spoke the other day, you're like does any of you speak any elemental languages at all?
Does anybody besides Elvish and Common? We got a no. Okay. That's all we got.
We all speak Gith.
Yeah, we do.
Okay, so we had Gith to that mix, and we still got nothing.
And eventually we're going to speak Jive.
You know, I think I should give the tieflings Yeti.
Both or just Dread?
Maybe just Dread. And we got to come up with a name for that Yeti.
I can tell you I'm not leaning towards the Bumble. So
we'll have to I think that would be Megan's go-to, so we'd have to override her on that one. Veto.
That was sarcasm. I am leaning towards the Bumble.
You are leaning towards the Bumble.
Big fan.
Uh-oh. Might have
Can we test out if he bounces or not?
Kind of a one-way test. I mean, if he does, great. If he doesn't, crap.
Emerge mention.
Murdering Yetis shouldn't be high on our priority list, I wouldn't think.
We've murdered everything else.
Fair point.
We just blasted the police the other day, so...
I was trying to steal a helicopter.
You
I don't know what you guys are doing.
We murdered an entire camp of Blizzard folk, so...
That was in your BS era, before Seth?
Never forget. You did get to see the aftermath, though.
That's true.
Well, that's all I've got this evening on Half Elves. Anybody else?
Anything else anyone would like to say about them?
No.
No.
Well, one thing I'd like to quote the Dragon Talk. Just a funny subject that came up. I don't remember who Shelley and were interviewing, but it was. They were talking about how one character had an elvish father and an elven mother. Just like, no, it can never happen that way.
Yeah, that... Well, I'd like to thank everybody for joining us tonight, and we'll see you all next time on Companions of Perception. Y'all have a great night.
You can also find us at companionsofperception.net, where I have articles coming up, and hopefully we'll get from UpperCast members coming up as well. Where we've got a list of features we want to do for you.
Mm-hmm. We'll see you next time. I would like to thank all of our guests, as well as bensound.com for our music, Extreme Action. You can find them at bensound.com, as well as visit us at companionsofperception.net.